Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. The government finally delivered some detail on its much-touted $1.5 billion broadband plan this week. A paper released by IT Minister Stephen Joyce outlines a plan that differs quite notably from what his predecessor Maurice Williamson talked up last year. Short version, a new Crown Fibre investment company will have $1.5 billion to invest in LFCs, or local fibre companies around the country, who will install new fibre optic cables, eventually to three-quarters of the nation. But some significant questions remain. With us now is Computer World editor Rob O'Neill to talk about what we know and what we still don't. Rob, what did you make of the discussion paper? We seem to know more about this plan than we have up till now.
Yeah, I think it's very positive. I mean, I think a lot of people were wondering what's going to happen to the Broadband Investment Fund, Labor's Broadband Investment Fund. I think people in the industry saw it as a good way to get maximum value for every dollar spent. And I think this has taken several leaves out of that book, and it's been received pretty positively.
Yeah, I was struck, although, yeah, on the other hand, I was struck by how different this is from what National was saying throughout the election campaign. You had Maurice Williamson saying that we'd have 75% of New Zealand homes connected to this ultra-fast fibre by 2014. It looks like we're not going to have any homes connected by 2014 now.
Yeah, it depends on which reports you read, but I mean, I've seen some reports saying if they really get a move on, then they might actually make some of those targets. But you know, I think there are positives and negatives in this. Obviously, the country regions haven't reacted too well. They're feeling a little bit left out. I think there's more to come for the I guess a key national constituency, shall we say. We'll wait and hear about that maybe next week. But I think the overall package at the moment looks pretty good, and it's contestable. They've committed themselves to open access on equal terms, and I think
they're doing all the virtuous things, aren't they? This is not going to be the property of a particular telco. Yeah. It's going to be open access. Everyone can use it.
And they can still get to use that lovely term, public-private partnerships, which, of course, National loves. And I think what's really interesting about that is when they talk about the private part of public-private partnerships, they're also talking about local bodies and Crown-owned entities as well. It's not necessarily closed. You know, private doesn't mean private anymore.
Yeah, because local authorities can be partners in these LFCs, local fibre companies.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that's probably the thing that impresses me about this. I was never comfortable with what they were talking about last year, a monolithic single company that would own all the fibre in New Zealand.
And yet, in a funny way, we've still got that. It's a kind of a merger of those two different types of plans. We've got the Crown Fibre Investment Company, whatever it is they call it, CFIC, plus 25 others, you know, but with the Crown Fibre Group really holding the cards. I think it's a really, really interesting and novel, and it hasn't thrown the baby out of the bathwater, to use a cliche. You know, it's kept some of the good things about the BIF fund.
Basic question, going back, when we're talking about such long lead-in times, 4 years or 5 years from now, is there any danger? I mean, are we building telegraph networks, or is broadband going to be it? You know,
fiber
broadband is going to be it for the next 50 years, for the next 100 years? Or, I mean, is there technology not going to move so fast that we end up investing in something that's out of date?
Well, I think we got return on investment from the telegraph network. So there's nothing wrong with building another telegraph network as long as it answers the needs for the next, say, 50 or 100 years, which, you know, is a big ask. I think there's a lot of comment about where's the demand going to come from. You know, how are you going to get people to upgrade to fiber? I think there has to be some effort to... and I think TiVo, the TVNZ TiVo announcement is actually playing into that as well. I think TVNZ has timed that pretty well.
Yeah, so that struck me as well.
Yeah, and obviously the TiVo announcement involves both an ISP service and download service as well as a set-top box.
Yeah, it's a Freeview decoder with this extra internet dimension to it.
Yeah, so a lot of people are now talking about how do you drive demand for that speed of broadband. And unfortunately, a lot of the talk around that seems to be around IPTV and downloadable movies as opposed to exporting software and driving our economy.
As John Key keeps saying, you'll be able to get HDTV. Well, we've got two quite efficient ways of delivering that already. I'm not sure that's the killer app.
No, exactly. But you can obviously, you know, it's got a huge consumer appeal, but that's not really the argument that's been put up, the business case that's been put up for making this investment. The business case has been driving productivity and efficiency, and you can see benefits in health and education. Sure, I can see all that stuff. But, you know, I think we're expecting a little bit more than that from this kind of investment in terms of driving GDP.
Where does this all leave telecom? Because it strikes me that the way this has been designed almost obliges telecom to dispense with its networks business.
Yeah.
It has to split up, which is quite a major intervention.
I think, once again, the market's going to decide that a little bit. I mean, but you've got a huge investment going on into competing infrastructure. The infrastructure is going to compete with the whole cabinetization rollout that telecom's doing at the moment. And people are talking about an investment ghetto being created, which is, you know, why invest in the old infrastructure when you've got this threat of an entirely new infrastructure being built across the top of it?
How big a danger do you think that is? Because that's, I mean, it's going to take at a minimum 10 years for, I mean, they're saying they'll have 75% of homes done in 10 years. Mm. If telecom stops investing, what happens for the next 10 years?
Yeah, I think you could. There's another scenario, which is that telecom keeps investing. I think they've committed a certain amount to investing and rolling out ADSL 2+. Telecom can still defend ADSL 2+ because it will meet a lot of people's needs. You know, when people go to download movies, they'll find they can actually do that across ADSL 2+, or at least a large number of them can.
And so, we had the report this week saying that New Zealand's broadband performance has improved, you know, 100% in the last year.
Yeah.
So that old copper is actually working quite well, isn't it?
There was a change in the methodology of that report. They hadn't measured ADSL 2+ before. So, you know, it's a hard one to get your head around exactly what the overall performance is. But, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt it's been rolled out, and there's no doubt it's making huge improvements in performance. So I don't think the old infrastructure is dead by any means, you know. And then we're talking about, you know, VDSL as well, beyond ADSL. Shorter, you have to be pretty close to an exchange to get the benefit of that.
Yeah, I mean, it strikes me, if telecom does keep investing, you're going to get the very odd situation of a national government competing against a corporate entity.
Yeah.
Competing against the private sector.
Yeah, totally.
Within its own network.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
In partnership with a range of different providers. I mean, it's always been kind of the holy grail of New Zealand. We've always believed that, in a sense, infrastructure competition has been what's been lacking. And then there's been a second meme around that, which is that we shouldn't have infrastructure competition because we're a very small country and we shouldn't be doubling up on fibre and that kind and broadband infrastructure. We should have an efficient way of delivering open infrastructure to a bunch of retailers. And I think there's a lot of conflicts to be seen going down the road between you know, the government competing with telecom, and with whether building across or doubling up on infrastructure that you don't necessarily have to.
So when we do start seeing this fibre, and it looks like it'll be businesses and hospitals and schools and that kind of thing first, who do you think is going to be the most delighted by that? Because I have to say, the screen production industry, I think, will be very excited about this.
Rod Drury. There's one happy camper. No, look, I mean, you know, there are a bunch of businesses now, information businesses, that are trying to deliver large files who can't do that very much. So the screen production is an obvious one. The health industry is another one. As they move towards digitizing radiology and so forth, there are big files to be moved around. And there's a lot of moves to develop electronic health records, which are accessible from everywhere. You know, a record that moves with you, right? And to do that, you have to have decent fiber broadband. So health, education is another one. I mean, you know, the RIANS network was the research and education advanced, whatever it's called, RIANS. Karen Network,
Karen
Advanced Network, that hasn't had the uptake that you would want, but you have to build for the future in networks. I mean, if you build for the present, you'll be outdated by the time you roll it out. So there's absolutely nothing wrong, really, with building it for a network, building a network that doesn't get immediate uptake.
Yeah, exactly. You need to. That's part of future-proofing.
Yeah.
The one thing we haven't heard about yet is whether Kordia will be allowed to go ahead and build its new international link across the Tasman.
Yeah.
And that seems to be up to Stephen Joyce. Do you think he'll let them do it?
I think there is a huge case for building a second Tasman cable. I mean, you know, you can say whatever you like about how robust the current one is, but there is a bottleneck there. And I think, but like anybody who's coming in to compete with an existing provider, you expose yourself to that provider then changing their terms and conditions and basically undermining you while you're investing. So, and we've seen that on numerous occasions in New Zealand where even the government shared network, which failed, it failed largely because the private sector responded by dropping its prices. I mean, that's not a bad result in itself, because what you're seeing there is competition. But, you know, I think we do need a second cable, a second Trans-Tasman cable, yeah.
Well, let's hope we do see that degree of competition, because I think that would be good for everyone. Rob O'Neill, thank you for your time.
No problem.
After the break, bringing back Georgie Pie and what would be the world's largest water pistol fight.